5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running.
There is no other institution that has the ability, uniquely.
Without a heritage, every generation starts over.
Ask not.
To remind the current regime.
What your country.
We the people tell the government what it is allowed to do.
To get back in their box and stay there.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
From the Heritage Foundation, this is Heritage Explains.
Francis Scott Key Bridge, which spans the Patapsco River in Baltimore, Maryland, was completed in March of 1977. Named after the writer of the Star-Spangled Banner and known for its distinctive truss design, the bridge has since been a critical artery for the city, as well as an iconic part of the Baltimore skyline. Having been a fixture for so long, like many notable structures, its permanence felt like a given. That's what made it even more surreal when, in the early morning hours of this past Tuesday, March 26th, a fully loaded container ship in the Patapsco River lost power and collided with one of the bridge's pillars. The bridge sustained major damage, resulting in several vehicles and individuals dropping into the water. At the time of this recording, 6 individuals are still believed to be missing. Such tragic events naturally lead us to ask, what went wrong? Could it happen again? And if so, how can we prevent it? Here to answer these questions is Steve Bradbury, now a distinguished fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Steve served in the Trump administration as general counsel to the Department of Transportation. During his time there, he also served as acting deputy secretary of transportation and acting secretary of transportation. So he is uniquely suited to shed light on this unfortunate accident. Steve Bradbury, welcome to Heritage Explains. Can you tell us who you are and what you do here at the Heritage Foundation?
Great. Well, thank you, Mark. Happy to be on. Steve Bradbury, I'm a distinguished fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Very happy to be here. Work on a number of issues, regulatory issues, transportation-related stuff. Project 2025 is a big focus of mine. FBI reform. I really cover a wide gamut of issues for Heritage. It's an exciting time to be here. And I came from the Department of Transportation. I served in the Trump administration. I was the Senate-confirmed general counsel of DOT for a year and a half. Last year and a half of the administration, I was the acting deputy secretary of transportation. And for the last 8 days, I was the acting secretary of transportation. So before that, I served in the Department of Justice in the Bush 43 administration, Office of Legal Counsel, and been in private practice for as a lawyer for many years in Washington on government-focused litigation, regulatory issues, antitrust, a lot of transportation-related issues.
So safe to say you know something about public policy and transportation, and the issue today we're talking about is an unfortunate incident that happened on Tuesday.
Horrible disaster, really.
So can you please tell us a little bit about what happened for those who may not know?
This is a massive disaster with multidimensional implications for transportation in the U.S. and really for our whole economy. So this bridge, the Francis Scott Key Bridge, crossing the Patapsco River, which is the inlet in and out of the Port of Baltimore, which happens to be one of the biggest, busiest ports on the East Coast of the United States. It's in fact, the number one port for the importation of new vehicles into the East Coast. So a lot of the big automakers import foreign-made vehicles from mostly from Europe or other places into the East Coast, or they come from Asia, whatever. Very, very important, busy port. The bridge itself is critical artery, mainly for trucking up and down the East Coast. There are 3 main arteries north-south through Baltimore, 95, 895, and this is 695, the Baltimore Beltway. But it's the only one that's a bridge. The other two are tunnels. And that's important because although regular tractor-trailer trucks can go through those tunnels, hazardous material, hazmat trucks cannot. So that includes tanker trucks, the trucks that are delivering fuel to gas stations and whatnot that have hazardous flammable materials, they don't allow them to go through those tunnels. They have to go over this bridge. Okay, this bridge is now completely demolished. And what happened is a major container ship was coming out of the port called the Dali. It's owned by owners and operators based in Singapore. And it was fully loaded with containers coming out of the port of Baltimore, as I gather, heading to Sri Lanka. And it had, as we understand it from reports, 22 crew members on board, mostly Indians from India. And the ship was piloted by a local harbor pilot helping it get out of the port of Baltimore, and it was heading toward the channelway under this bridge. The bridge, Francis Scott Key Bridge, is a truss bridge. It's called a continuous through truss. It's got a big steel cage over it and a suspended roadway underneath. It is the third longest such bridge in the world. It was. And the ship would head under it. If you've seen videos of the accident, you see that the ship loses power. This happened at about 1:30 in the morning. It's dark. The ship is lit up, and then it goes all black. And then a few seconds pass, the lights come back on. A few more seconds, lights go off again. So two power losses. And when the power went out on the ship, it lost propulsion. It lost steering capability. So here we have a massive, fully loaded container ship, almost 1,000 feet long, gross weight of 95,000 tons, fully loaded with containers, massive momentum, out of control in the Patapsco River Channel just outside the port of Baltimore. And it hit the worst possible thing it could hit, the pier on the Francis Scott Key Bridge, collapsed the entire bridge structure. It was 1:30 in the morning. It sort of looks like fortuitously there had been quite a bit of traffic in the moments before the accident. I think the captain of the ship or the ship's crew had radioed to the port that they had a propulsion problem with the ship. And someone seems to have been on the ball, and they apparently notified police in time to slow or stop some of the traffic heading over the bridge. So there was minimal, there was a lull in traffic, or minimal traffic, it appears, at the moment of the collapse. It happened so suddenly, the collapse. But there were some construction workers pouring some concrete on the roadbed of the bridge. And I understand that six of those construction workers remain missing. Some vehicles apparently did go into the channel, including potentially a tractor-trailer truck. So horrible incident. It the entire steel superstructure truss of the bridge is collapsed and lying across the channel. The entire port of Baltimore is blocked. No ships in or out. Obviously, first priority is retrieve any remaining victims. Search and rescue has to be complete. There needs to be a safety assessment. NTSB is there, National Traffic Safety Board. The Coast Guard will be involved in that. And they'll check out the ship, the history of the ship, the piloting, the bridge structure. There's no immediate indication that the bridge was deficient or weakened. You wouldn't expect the piers holding up the bridge would be able to withstand this kind of collision from such a massive ship. The power should not have gone out on that ship. That is an extremely dangerous situation for a ship weighing that much to be moving without control in a contained port area like that. And we see the results. Just horrible. But it'll take weeks to clear the debris from this bridge. The roadbed and structure, steel structure of the bridge, will have to be cut up and removed from the channel. That's a massive effort that will probably take some weeks. Maybe they can get it done in a couple of weeks. I don't know, but that would be a Herculean effort. And then this artery for north-south traffic on the East Coast is going to need to be replaced. And that's a long-term project. The bridge was built in the 1970s. It cost hundreds of millions of dollars, and it took 5.5 years to build it back then. That was 1972 to 1977. And you know how much slower big projects are these days with the environmental reviews and everything. we're all going to have to come together, I think, you know, as a nation, federal government, the state, and make this happen. Obviously, Congress has appropriated huge amounts of money in the infrastructure bill that President Biden got passed in 2021. And so there's a lot of money there. I don't know if that can be repurposed for this purpose or diverted for this purpose, but gosh knows Congress has been spending enormous amounts of money on infrastructure in these recent bills. And this would seem to me to be an extremely high priority for economic security, prosperity of our country, and just the need to move good services and people.
So looking at this situation, obviously it involved loss of life. It involves some infrastructure upheaval and some economic upheaval with all of this. However, as you're looking at it from your perspective, you see a lot more to be worried about here, about what this incident might signal for our country's current policies and policies going forward.
Well, I do. When it comes to the Department of Transportation, the Coast Guard, other elements of the federal government that are involved here, Department of Homeland Security, of which Coast Guard is part, safety has to be mission number one, and the security of our infrastructure that supports the economic vitality and prosperity of America, that cannot be compromised. We cannot lose attention from that top priority mission. And I'm more than a little worried that we have lost attention. We have diverted our attention and our priorities away from those core priorities of safety and security for the American people by directing them towards things like climate change, social justice, equity, some of these other priorities that if you look on the website, you hear the speeches are top of mind, top of priority for Pete Buttigieg at the Department of Transportation, even for elements of the government like Department of Defense and the Coast Guard and some of these in Department of Homeland Security, some of these FEMA and others that are so critical to Homeland Security, to emergency response and whatnot. And you also see it in international organizations, and they're involved here. They have relevance. The UN has an entity called the International Maritime Organization, IMO. It's a UN entity that's involved in tracking safety violations and issues with international shipping. There's some question as to whether this ship, the Dali, owned and operated by firms in Singapore, has a history of issues. There have been reports that it had a less significant collision leaving the port of Rotterdam in 2016. The ship apparently was built by Hyundai Heavy Industries in 2015, so it's a pretty new ship. But there's also recent reports, don't know if it's confirmed yet, don't know if it's true, that the ship had a similar propulsion outage or issue last June, in a foreign port, and that it had been reviewed for compliance, safety compliance, by U.S. authorities, which would probably mean the Coast Guard, in September. That will all have to be checked out by the NTSB, but it just makes you wonder, because this international organization, the IMO, which is supposed to focus on safety of international shipping and violations of safety rules, et cetera, is also focused on climate change. It's also focused on issues relating to the type of fuel that ships use. There's a big international push, and the U.S. government is involved in trying to force international shipping companies and shippers, ship operators, to convert to different types of fuels for climate change reasons. This is a big focus and emphasis. And it just makes you wonder if some of these disastrous events, if some of that diversion of attention to other priorities that are not so focused on safety and security might have a role to play in disasters like this. I'm not saying it was the case here, but it really is a question that, you know, we really need to be asking ourselves.
And it's one that you mentioned has implications, because if, for instance, we are not paying attention to our infrastructure and we're allowing weaknesses like this, who's to say that a bad foreign actor could try to move in and exploit, take out a key bridge or a key piece of infrastructure that maybe we've neglected for these other priorities?
Well, that's right. Critical. We have, you know, transportation infrastructure like bridges, tunnels, ports, rail lines. This is critical infrastructure, just like the electricity grid. Critical infrastructure for homeland security, for national security. And the planning for ensuring adequate protection of this critical infrastructure, for responding to potential threats to it, is coordinated by the Department of Homeland Security. It's supposed to be coordinated by the Department of Homeland Security, which is currently under the supervision of Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. And he's been impeached recently by the House of Representatives because of his disastrous role in overseeing the president's open border policies on immigration. That really seems to be where his focus is that disastrous immigration policy pursuit. And it makes you question how much capability, competence does he really bring to bear attention to the issues on these critical homeland security questions, helping to coordinate private industry, state and local government, law enforcement, federal government entities and authorities to protect our critical infrastructure. I personally don't have a lot of confidence in his leadership. Coast Guard is under his supervision as well. Now, the Coast Guard is a top-notch outfit, but again, they're not immune from, you know, the latest social justice priorities, climate change goals, et cetera. And I just want to know that the people in responsible positions are focused like a laser on the issues that really matter: safety of infrastructure, the security of this these systems, transportation systems, which are so critical to the economic health and vitality of our country and our prosperity as Americans.
Steve Bradbury, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mark. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you to Steve Bradbury for his contribution to today's episode. You can follow Steve on X at SG Bradbury. You can also find more of his work at heritage.org. And thanks, as always, to you for listening to Heritage Explains. If you have any thoughts or feedback for us, we look forward to hearing from you. You can reach out at heritageexplains@heritage.org. Take care. We'll see you next week.
Heritage Explains is brought to you by more than 500,000 members of the Heritage Foundation. It's written and produced by Mark Ghani, Lauren Evans, and John Popp.